It's All About Food with Karen Hartglass, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Thanks for listening. And I'm sure food's on everyone's mind a little bit more than every day, because we've got that very important, very big holiday coming up tomorrow, Thanksgiving. And it's one of my favorite holidays. A lot of wonderful, wonderful food is offered on this holiday. And the great thing about it is there are so many wonderful dishes that are easily made from plants that can be completely cruelty-free. And there's just that one big thing that people like to have on the table that really, really doesn't need to be there, which is the turkey. So here's to many turkey-free Thanksgiving tables tomorrow. And one of the things that I always encourage people to do is find their kitchen. What do I mean by that? Well, I encourage people to find the kitchen and start making fresh, healthy, delicious food. The tendency more and more is for people to dine out very frequently. I know we all have very hectic, busy lives, and it's so much more convenient to go out. And more, there are places that have all kinds of wonderful foods to go, including Thanksgiving. There are more places, Whole Foods and other places, will completely cater your dinner. I don't have to tell you this, you probably know. And so people are spending less and less time in the kitchen. And I think it's more than sad. But I do know that for our Thanksgiving dinner with my family, everybody makes pretty much all the food from scratch. And personally, I think it tastes better, it's fresher, and it's healthier. You can really monitor how much sugar, salt, and fat you put in these foods. You can choose organic and locally grown. And it's fun. There's something meditative and zen-like when you're chopping and preparing and putting love into the food. I really don't think most of these foods that you get in most restaurants or from catering companies have that special ingredient, love. Okay, so I want to introduce my guest today, and I'm really looking forward to talking with her. It's going to be another sweet show. I've had a dessert theme going on for a few weeks, and we're going to be talking with Kathy Olson. Kathy Olson, she is the author of several natural food cookbooks, has articles published in national magazines such as Mothering, National Awakenings, Vegetarian Voice, and Veg Family magazines. She's the library media technician in charge of an elementary school library. She's directed the Central Coast Writers Conference for 4 years and has served on the boards of the Central Coast Book and Author Festival's Friends of the Napomo Library and SLO Night Writers. And she's currently at work on a fictional chapter book series for children. We're going to be talking about all of her books, but she has a new one that's just come out called Lick It, Creamy, Dreamy Vegan Ice Creams Your Mouth Will Love. Kathy, is it Kathy?
It's Kathy.
Okay, I was like, is it Kata or Kathy, but it's Kathy.
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, I just questioned because it's C-A-T-H-E, and
yeah.
I love names that aren't spelled the way we expect them to be.
Yeah, well, when I was growing up, Kathy was like the most popular name, and so I just wanted it to stand out a little bit from all the other Kathys.
It's prettier when looking at it. Yeah, I like it.
Thanks.
From, you know, I spell my name kind of funny, too, so I appreciate it. It just makes you pay attention when it's not what you expect.
Right.
And frequently my message is all about paying attention. Paying attention to every moment in your life, what you're doing, what's happening, and then certainly the ingredients that are in your food and everything that's going into your mouth as you chew it. Pay attention.
Right. That's true. And while you're cooking, paying attention is very important.
Oh, yeah, for lots of reasons. And I've got the scars to prove it. Okay, so you have this new book called Lick It, and everybody loves ice cream.
Yes, I think so, and I don't know, maybe I do more than most, but yeah, I've been an ice cream lover since I was a girl, and yeah, it's always been my biggest treat. If I want something sweet, it's usually ice cream.
Well, you know, it has two, if not three, of those big dangerous ingredients, sugar and fat. The other one, of course, is salt, and some people do put a little salt in their ice creams, too. And so how many ice cream flavors do you have in this book?
I have about 200.
200, certainly more than 31.
Yes, yes. I think I beat Baskin-Robbins.
Right. I noticed, so there are some flavors in here that Baskin-Robbins did make popular, like Rum Raisin and Rocky Road.
Yeah, I tried to, with the book, I wanted to recreate a lot of those traditional flavors that we all grew up with, and that maybe, you know, if you're not eating dairy, that you aren't able to get anymore. So I wanted people to be able to relive their childhood.
Yeah. So the thing is, most of these recipes are coconut milk-based, and coconut milk is really a wonderful, wonderful gift from nature. It's some people actually compare it to breast milk.
Right, because it's really high in lauric acid, just like breast milk is. So.
And so you just add a little vanilla to it, and it's really a comfort food.
It is, and I guess that's sort of what ice cream is all about, that comfort food. Yeah.
So it's really a great replacement for heavy cream. Personally, I think it's better. I haven't had dairy in, oh gosh, over 20 years, and I certainly don't miss it. But I've been doing more and more with coconut milk and other things like cashew cream that I use to substitute for heavy cream, and we've been getting making some really extraordinary decadent things lately. Thanks to those things. Yeah, so I think you show in the book that it's really pretty easy to make a variety of ice creams with some very simple basic ingredients.
Yeah, it's surprisingly easy. I think once you get an ice cream, you'll really be surprised. It's in the time you can go to the supermarket, you know, pick up a gallon of ice cream and get back, you could have made a batch from scratch and it was just like what you were saying earlier. You can control the ingredients, you can control the sweetness, you can make sure, you know, get organic, you can get local fruits, and so you're getting such a much better product, and really in the same time it would take you to go and buy it.
Yeah, well, that's the point. It's not really inconvenient. It just takes a little thought. It just takes a little planning. So when you're doing your shopping, you purchase the ingredients so you have them when you're ready to go.
Exactly. And that's one of the things I do actually in all my cookbooks is I sort of do an ingredients sort of dictionary and sort of shopping guides. And that way, yeah, you can have you know, you can have your coconut milk in your pantry and, you know, have your fresh fruit on hand or even frozen fruit. You know, in the summer when all the fruit's so plentiful, I buy extra strawberries and things like that and just stick them in the freezer and then, you know, I have them ready to go to make an ice cream.
Right. Very good.
Yeah.
I think my favorite in here is the drumstick cone.
Well, Yeah, you know, that's what I was going along with, your childhood favorites. You know, I mean, you can't buy non-dairy stuff on an ice cream truck. It may be a sorbet or a popsicle or something, but yeah, drumstick cones and fudgesicles and yeah, all of that kind of stuff that you see on the ice cream truck, I recreated here and with non-dairy recipes.
And they're better.
They are.
The quality of the nuts and the quality of the chocolate.
Right.
Really, really crazy. You know, I'm just getting an idea here of like having a party and making some of these treats for my guests.
Yeah, and actually, well, that's how we tested it. My kids invited their friends over, and that's what we did. We made drumstick cones.
Okay,
and,
I'm talking about adults.
That works, too.
Yeah, I think they will go nutso over some of these.
Yeah.
Very good. So you've got sorbets and sherbets and ice cream. I'm kind of confused. Can you explain the difference between sherbet and sorbets? And ice cream.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'll start with the sherbet and sorbet. A lot of people think that sherbet is dairy-free.
Right.
And it's actually not. Sorbet is, by definition, dairy-free. It's usually just fruit. And then sherbet is mostly fruit, but it still does have dairy. So it's sort of in between a sorbet and an ice cream. And the ice cream is the real creamy, you know, it's just creamier and lighter and less fruity and less icy than the three of them.
Very good.
Yeah.
I think maybe some store brands might even confuse, because I think I've seen some dairy-free sherbets, but I'm not going to...
Well, there might be, you know, they might,
yeah.
You know, there's dairy-free ice creams and stuff,
yeah,
too.
But that makes sense.
But the original, yeah.
Yeah. And then there's another one in here, where you make these bombs.
Oh, yeah. Those are fun. You know, I have a lot of ice cream desserts, pies and cakes, and a bomb is, it's a molded ice cream dessert. So you take a bowl and you mold in your ice cream, and some of them I have layers of brownie or granola, and you spread it all into a bowl and let it freeze, and then you unmold it, and you have this beautiful round, you know, ice cream cake.
Right.
They're,
really,
yeah, they're
really
so
fun.
Impressive. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're great for the holidays, too, the bombs, the pies, all of the frozen desserts, because you make them in advance, just stick them in your freezer and pull them out when you need them. So they're different, you know, you don't see them.
That's right. Yeah, I'm liking it. It's kind of recalibrating my thinking here for some entertaining in the future. Because I like making desserts, and I usually make a cake and a fruit pie and a cookie of some sort, all different flavors. But I'm thinking one or two of these would be really, really fun. And the ice cream bomb with the orange sherbet and the vanilla ice cream, I used to really love those creamsicles.
The creamsicle. Actually, that one I invented for my daughter's birthday, and that's what we served at her birthday party. And, yeah, it was like, I called it a creamsicle cake. And, yeah, the kids just went nuts over it. So that's a really good one for kids. And then I made the adult version with the orange sorbet and rosemary ice cream in the center, and that was my adult version of the creamsicle bomb.
Right. I've tried basil in some confections, and I love it. And so when I saw your recipes with rosemary and lavender, I thought, yeah, I could see that working very nicely.
Yeah, they're really good. They're just like this creamy ice cream with a hint of, you know, the herbs. And that was the other thing. You know, I have, like I said, the traditional flavors, but I also wanted some gourmet and some fun flavors. And they all use fresh or, you know, real herbs and spices. I'm not really big on a lot of, you know, bottled flavorings. I really like the, you know, using the real foods. So those are really fun to do. And, yeah, one of my favorite in there is lemongrass, which is just a little spicy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I made a terrine, which a terrine is another molded dessert, but in a loaf pan. And I made layers of the lemongrass ice cream and then mango sorbet. And then the sweet of the fruit with the spiciness of the lemongrass was a really great combination.
Yeah, so the thing is, you're not going to find these flavors in the store.
Right.
And there might be some boutique kind of companies that make exotic flavors of ice cream, but they're probably going to be dairy-based, and they're probably going to be a fortune. And
right.
So, and this is a great way to really have fun, make all kinds of interesting flavors, and use very high-quality ingredients. And now I want to step into the next topic that I wanted to talk about, which is children. So do we want to talk any more about this book?
Maybe just a quick note about ice cream makers before
yes.
we move on.
Great.
Ice cream makers, you know, they're not the ice cream makers of our childhood, or at least of my childhood, which was the rock salt and the big bags of ice and the churning for hours.
Yeah, I have one of those wooden buckets. I haven't used it in a long time because it leaks.
It leaks, and they're messy. They're, you know, you have to really plan. You have to have the time. And that's fun for once in a while for the experience. But
mm-hmm.
when you just want to, you know, feel like ice cream and you want some quick, the ice cream makers they have now are awesome. They're under $50, sometimes even like as cheap as $30. I have a Cuisinart, which is around $50. And they have these canisters where the ice cream is churned, and you keep them in the freezer, and they freeze solid. They have this gel inside that keeps them cold. And when you're ready to make ice cream, you just pop that canister onto your ice cream maker, pour in the ice cream base, and churn it. And in about 25 minutes, you have ice cream.
Mm.
And, you know, and it's just all you got to do is wash that canister and put it away, and that's all there is to it. So it's super easy. It's you know, it really is just very convenient.
Okay, so that's a great gift idea for the holidays.
Yeah,
the ice cream maker with this book.
That's right. There you go.
So, great. I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm going to say it again. I really encourage people to rediscover their kitchen. I was giving a talk not too long ago to a lot of women at a retirement home, and of some very lovely homes, and I knew that they all had incredibly gorgeous kitchens, and I never cooked a thing in them, which is crazy. So I wanted to go then into the next topic, which one thing leads to the other, and that is, how much fun is it to make ice cream with kids?
It's really fun. And not only, you know, do I do a lot with my own kids and their friends, but I've given lots of workshops, and it's just fun, you know. And it's what's neat about ice cream, it's sort of, for me, soup and ice cream are kind of my favorite things to make, because measurements don't have to be so exact. Like, you know, when you're baking, everything has to be measured perfectly. But ice creams are forgiving, and you can just combine your favorite flavors. So it's also, you know, a chance for kids to be a little creative. And, yeah, you don't have to worry that they, you know, not measure exactly right. So it's really fun. And it's neat for them to see this liquid base, you know, turn into this ice cream. You know, it's almost like a little science lesson in there, too,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how that works. And then there's lots of different toppings. In the book I have, you know, different sauces and toppings and, you know, so that's a fun, too. You know, you can make your ice cream. You can make a whole little sundae bar. And, you know, there's just so many ways for kids to make it their own, too, which I really like. I think with feeding kids, you know, they like to, you know, have some control over what they eat.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, with ice cream and toppings, they can make it their own. It's not something that's already just handed to them.
This would probably be a great thing to do at a children's party.
Yes, that's we have. This was, I guess I have to say, out of my cookbooks, this is probably the most fun to test. And any time, you know, the kids, I'm like, okay, I need to taste some flavors. And they'd invite their friends over, and it was, you know, party time. So it was fun.
Well, I encourage more and more the kids getting involved with their food and knowing where it comes from and how it's made. I think it would help them make a lot better choices.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is, you know, for making ice cream, you can start at the farmer's market or the grocery, picking out your ingredients and, you know, bring it into the house, picking herbs, you know, from the garden. There's so many ways for the kids to connect with a really, you know, with something that they really like.
Yeah, and I like talking more and more to people about where food comes from. It doesn't just come from a grocery store.
Right.
There's such a huge disconnect, and it's to a point, I think, where we don't enjoy our food as much because we take it for granted. Mm-hmm. I want ice cream, I just eat it. And, you know, I believe that when we invest time in anything, we enjoy it more and we appreciate it more. So, I mean, that's I'm making the point for food. When we take the time and shop for the ingredients and really touch and feel and choose and sniff and smell and read ingredients and then bring them home and lay them out and prepare them and put them all together and wait for the final product, it's like art.
That's right. And I think it, you savor, you know, when we eat our ice creams that we've made, we savor it more and we're remembering, you know, all of these pieces that went into it. And yeah, and it you know, makes you, like you said, you really appreciate it. One of the things we do a lot is I have some different smoothie recipes in all of my different cookbooks, but when one of my daughters makes a smoothie for us, yeah, the rest of us sit and we try to guess what was in it, and it's just such a fun, and so we're noticing the different flavors, and it's the same with some of these ice creams, especially the ones that have, like, the herbs and the spices infused into them, it's like, can you taste that thyme and the lemon thyme sorbet and really noticing it.
I didn't remember any basil in any of your recipes, but I had a chocolate mousse with basil in it.
Oh.
And to taste it, I don't know if I didn't make it, if I would have recognized, I would have gone, oh, that's a familiar flavor. I really like this combination, but what is it?
Yes, it's funny when you take different, put herbs or, in something that they're not usually in, that it takes on a whole different kind of flavor.
Yeah. Okay. So I just want to mention you have a number of websites. One is a kathyolson.blogspot.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got some nice posts with recipes. I'm looking at a pumpkin bread recipe just in time for pumpkin season. And simplynaturalbooks.com.
Right. So Simply Natural Books, it tells about my different books. It has sample recipes, some articles I wrote. It, would give information about my different workshops that I'd be teaching. And then my blog is, more I'm sharing recipes. I review books, if there's issues that come up to do with, organics or genetic engineering or different food politics, that's what you'll find on my blog.
Great. Because there's a lot of information that people need to hear about, and if they've heard about it once, they haven't heard about it enough. More and more and more and more and more. We can't put this information out there enough, and one time certainly isn't enough to have people get it. So I really encourage as many of us putting it out in our own style, packaging it so that people will get it one way or another. So we're going to take a little break. Kathy, stay with us. We're going to talk more about your other books and the great things that you're doing with food. So stay with us.
You're listening to PRM, Progressive Radio Network.
Gary Nall. I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one form that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
This is Bill Bowie.
And this is Kelsey Flynn.
Of Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. We bring you news and interviews
with the likes of Wangari Maathai, Bill McKibben, Hazel Henderson, Paul Hawken, Francis Moore LePay, and many others. Tune in to Sea Change Radio here on the Progressive Radio Network on Saturdays at 7 in the evening.
Houston, we have a problem.
Christiane Brown. In today's 24-hour news cycle, most people get about a minute of real truth. Not on the Solution Zone. Every week, I bring in America's best-known activists, bloggers, authors, and politicians to uncover the hidden issues that help separate the truth from the spin.
The Solution Zone with Christiane Brown, every Wednesday at 3 on Progressive Radio Network.
Progressives, this is Betsy Rosenberg on the Green Front. I hope you've been enjoying the news I'm bringing you hot off the press, so to speak, like behind-the-scenes stories and insider scoop from Al Gore's recent climate conference. I know the Greenistas and love introducing the most informative and inspiring experts on the Green Front every week. So join me as we learn more about our environment and what we can do to turn it around.
The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, every Wednesday at 2 on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network, your voice for independent views.
Karen Hartglass, and this is It's All About Food. Thanks for joining me, and we're talking about my favorite subject, food. We just spent a half hour with Kenta Olson talking about ice cream, and we're going to talk a lot more to Kathy Olson and some of her other books, but I just wanted to mention a few things that are coming up. There's a new organization called nutritionalresearch.org, and I welcome you to go to that website. They're raising money in order to do just that, research for nutrition, and my favorite doctor, Dr. Joel Fuhrman, is a part of it, and they're having a big event on December 8th in Manhattan. If you're curious or interested, please visit that website, nutritionalresearch.org. All right, Kathy.
Yes.
You're back. We're back. We're all back. Okay. So what I want to focus on now, more than the last half hour, is children. And you have two girls?
I do.
And what are their ages?
They're 9 and 11.
Oh, they're just getting extra challenging. Just entering that, the preteen.
The tween,
yeah.
Teenage, yeah.
But I bet they're good.
Yeah, they're sweet things.
And so not only is it challenging for most people today just to get through their day, work and all the responsibilities and paying bills and the economy and unemployment and all that stuff. But when you have kids and you want to feed them and feed them well, a lot of people really struggle.
True.
And you've put out a book, The Vegetarian Mother's Cookbook, Whole Foods to Nourish Pregnant and Breastfeeding Women and Their Families.
Yeah.
So I don't have that book. When did that come out?
That came out in 2005, and I wrote that book, well, a few reasons. One is I wanted to really help pregnant and nursing women to eat well. I noticed a really big difference in my two pregnancies. In my first one, I was not eating that well. I mean, I was vegetarian, but I was sort of the junk food vegetarian, mm-hmm. ate out a lot, and you know, I just didn't feel like cooking, so anyway, and I just was not thriving. I wasn't feeling that good through that pregnancy. I was underweight, and but then with my second pregnancy, now I had a toddler at home, so we weren't really going out much, and I was, you know, really cooking from scratch, and I really you know, I was really making sure I was getting my protein and my greens and the minerals I needed and all of that. And I had just such a whole different experience, in my pregnancy. And it was just so much better. And so then my midwife was actually really the one who encouraged me to write this book. Because I think, when you're a vegetarian, you do need to take extra care during times of really all the time, but especially when you're pregnant and you're growing a whole nother person. Mm-hmm. And, you need to make sure you're getting the protein. And one of the other things I found, the omega-3 fatty acids, you really need to make sure you're getting that all the time, but, especially at those times. But I tried to design this cookbook where maybe you'd buy it when you're pregnant or nursing, but one that you could use for the rest of your life to feed your family. And I tried to address those things that you said, where you're working and you're busy and you don't have time, spend hours in the kitchen. So how can you get a healthy meal that your family's going to like, in a short amount of time? So that was my goal with the book. And I still use it. My kids are older, but these are still the recipes that I eat. And especially now that I'm working, I had been working from home for years, and then it's just been in the last couple of years I started working out of the home. And, it is challenging to get home at 5 o'clock and then have to, think about cooking when you just want to sit down and put your feet up.
Right.
And so I'm actually happy I had written this cookbook. It's really helpful to me now.
Do your girls help with some of the meal preparation?
They do, and that was, that's something that's really important to me, is, like you said, that they know where their food comes in and that they know how to prepare it. I don't want them, going out of the house and, eating takeout because they don't know how to cook. So they cook a lot. In fact, they have their cooking nights where they cook dinner. So, they're getting quite independent in the kitchen, which I think is wonderful.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe it doesn't work for all kids, but I think for most kids, they have fun making their own food.
Oh, they love it. Yeah, and it's not only is it fun for them to prepare it, but I'll tell you, the pride, on their faces when we're eating the dinner that they made, you can't get that anywhere else.
Are there some favorites that work well with children?
They love to make veggie burgers. I have some different veggie burger recipes in here that they really like to make. And, of course, those are fun. Pizza, we make a lot of pizza. That's one that we kind of like to do together. We'll make pizzas and everyone, sort of tops their own. Burritos are another one. I try to, the ones that I like for them are the ones that don't have a whole lot of chopping, even though my older one, can chop pretty well, but still like to be careful. One thing that they love, they've been making this for years, is a breakfast that my mom used to make for us when I was a girl. She brought it from Germany, and it's called muesli. And it's oats and fruit and milk and nuts and things like that. And they love to make that for breakfast, and especially in the summer when we have all those good fruits coming out.
So I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's something that I really love, and it's something that is really simple. And I have real issues. Sorry, folks, but, most things come in a box. I'm not interested in. They've got usually junk in them, they're stale, they're just not whole real food, and so many cereals are just processed, and I personally find it so much more enjoyable where you can buy oats, rolled oats, but you could also get other grains because they have flaked wheat and flaked barley and flaked rye, and go to a health food store with the bulk food bins and try them all.
Exactly, yeah. And if you have gluten issues, there's flaked rice, and there's so many different grains out there.
And then you mix it up with different raw nuts and seeds and dried fruit, and And you could do it in advance and put a big container together and keep it in the refrigerator or something, and dip into it all week, and it's
yes,
so good.
Yes, that's right. Yes, and my mom used to make a big batch in the summer, and that's what, you know, some of I grew up on the East Coast, and those hot summer days, we just eat breakfast, lunch, and supper. We just dip into the big bowl of muesli.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a good, such a good point about breakfast, and I offer a lot of easy breakfast ideas made with whole foods, and I agree with you. I'm not a big fan of cereal or, you know, anything that's been sitting on the store shelf for
forever,
shelf
mm-hmm.
life for 2 or 3 years. That's you know, and I might keep a box in the cereal for in the pantry for emergencies, but on the most part, you know, we eat a lot of porridges, grains like millet and quinoa and brown rice, you know, or brown rice. I have a recipe in there for brown rice cereal. Like, it's sort of like cream of wheat,
mm-hmm.
but you can use the different grains. Make it yourself in the same, you know, make up a bunch of it, and then in the morning when you get up for work, you know, it takes 15 minutes to cook, and you have your porridge. And it's such a you know, much better way to start the day.
Well, it's so much more satisfying, and it holds you for until lunch, really.
Right, exactly.
because, well, unlike the dried cereals, when you have a cooked cereal, it's got water in it. And that helps fill you up, and it's got more fiber in it. And
right.
you can add, I like to add lots of fresh fruit, and so you end up with this giant bowl, if you do it the way I do it, which has got an apple in it, a pear in it, a banana in it, and it's crazy,
mm-hmm.
and you're stuffed.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, you can add some nuts or seeds on there for your fatty acids and minerals, and yeah, you're right, it's a whole meal. And for those that do like cold cereals, I actually, besides the muesli, you know, is a cold cereal, but I also
yeah.
have a recipe for a crunchy buckwheat cereal,
mm.
which sort of has is a texture of grape nuts,
mm-hmm.
but it's just with whole buckwheat that you roast in the oven, and then you toss it with a little bit of maple syrup and some nut or seed butter, and it's like a cold cereal, but, you know, it's a whole grain and it's fresh. So
that's good.
Good. Yeah.
I'm going to check that out. For a few years ago, I was eating all raw food. I did it for about 2 years. It was really an interesting experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so I used to sprout buckwheat and dehydrate it
mm-hmm.
and have it's called buckwheaties or something, you know, like Wheaties, and make nut milk, and that
yeah.
was really yummy, but very
yeah,
time-consuming. but I haven't tried this version. And buckwheat is such a great food, and in this country, it just doesn't get the press like it does in Europe.
I know, in the cold, and it's especially for the winter, it's such a warming food, which I think is why it's so popular in, you know, like in Russia and, you know, those sort of cold sort of climates, because it's a really warming, nourishing food. So this time of year, buckwheat's a great thing to eat. And I have several buckwheat recipes, you know, for some casseroles and some sort of dinner type of dishes with buckwheat. In fact, I try to really use a variety of grains. I think we get so into, as Americans, that everything is either wheat or white rice. And,
mm-hmm.
and there's just so many other grains out there, millet and quinoa, that are so full of protein and nutrients. And they're good, you know, not only when you're pregnant and breastfeeding, but for your kids and, you know, for your whole life. And so I really try to show people, you know, take the mystery out of some of these alternative grains, and you know they're easy to cook, and you know, like for example, millet cooks as fast as white rice. Excuse me. You know, brown rice, maybe people are intimidated; it takes
mm-hmm.
40 minutes to cook, but you know, quinoa and millet, they take 15.
They're really
minutes.
Fast. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, so it's a good alternative to white
yeah,
rice.
Yeah, and well, in the description of this book, you have a line here, wheat-free, soy-free, dairy-free, egg-free, and especially wheat-free. There are more and more people that are having issues with wheat, either
mm-hmm.
celiac disease, gluten intolerance, wheat allergies. I am absolutely convinced now that wheat gives me a two-day headache.
Oh, really?
And so, you know, if I can have it in tiny little amounts, but I really have to be careful. And it's unfortunate because I love to bake. I love making breads, whatever, but yeah, there's this headache thing happening.
So, yeah.
You know, I'm not, wheat is, it's very strange. I'm not sure if we will discover in our lifetime what's going on with the wheat, because people have been eating wheat for millions of years, and well, maybe just thousands of years. And agriculture, what started about 10,000 years ago. So, but we're doing something weird to it now.
Right, that's what I'm thinking of too. It's something that we've
The hybridization or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we should be able to eat it. And I mean, for some people, it's life threatening with celiac disease, where their body isn't able to absorb nutrients. And but there are lots of wonderful things and lots of wonderful grains and baked goods that can be made without wheat.
Right. And some people that can't handle wheat that well, the older versions of wheat, like spelt and kamut, sometimes their body can deal with those better. So those are good substitutes.
Okay. Now, you work in a school library of an elementary school.
Yeah.
Now, do you get to proselytize while you're there? About food.
Do you get to educate
about food to children?
Since my kids have been I have been homeschooling my kids, and then they've been in public school for, I think, about 4 years or so. And that has, you know, that's when I came in with, yeah, I'm going to do something about school lunches and, you know, do some education. So before I got my full-time job, I was in there a lot, designing these different wellness programs for kids and for parents. And we got salad bars in all the cafeterias. And so, so it's come a long way. Now, as my job in the librarian, I'm really working on the school I work on. I work at is a pretty low income area, and I'm really just so focused on trying to get these kids reading and in love with books that the healthy eating in the library hasn't been my main agenda anymore. But I think once, you know, I just started last year, so that'll come, and it does come. I mean, I definitely you know, read books with good messages, and, you know, yeah. So, but yeah,
but it,
that's,
you know,
that's
it's
my
connected.
Two passions, I think, are the healthy eating and the reading and books. So I try to balance them.
Yeah, and they're also connected, because kids that are not being fed properly have are distracted easily and can't concentrate, and they're not providing the nutrition for their brains to develop appropriately,
right.
Which is really, really unfortunate.
I know. There's such a correlation. So, yeah, so definitely, yeah, I'm always talking to the kids.
Are there
choices?
Can you recommend any favorite books or media for children on healthy eating?
I like a lot of books that, one of the things I got with, I get a lot in my workshops with kids is that, you know, with parents is saying, oh, my kids, well, all they'll eat are, you know, chicken nuggets and Cheetos or things like that. So, first of all, talk to them about, well, if you don't want them to eat those, why do you have them?
Exactly.
But I love to read books to kids about, not being afraid to try new foods and, you know, to be open to, you know, just trying things. And in fact, I've done a lot of taste testing in the cafeteria with fruits and vegetables off the salad bar, you know, and, you know, just taste it. If you don't like it, you don't need to finish it, but, you know, just be open to trying it. So I love books, you know, like Green Eggs and Ham and, and I Won't Ever, Not Ever Eat a Tomato, and, you know, just things where, you know, just encouraging them to try a fruit or a vegetable or a food that is different, and, you know, you might like it. And that would happen with us. I remember with the sugar snap peas, we sampled those in the cafeteria, and I found if I could just get one kid at a table to try it, then everybody else would.
Right.
And, you know, and then it swept through the cafeteria, and they were all loved, and they ended up adding those permanently to the salad bar because kids surprisingly found out, wow, these are really good.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
So,
gosh.
Yeah, so I think just opening kids up to, you know, not being afraid to try things.
How did we get to this place that we're in today? How did we get so far away from wholesome, nutritious eating that tastes good? How did we develop our taste buds to like garbage?
Well, you know, I think there's been a lot of experimentation and, you know, money going into, you know, finding those perfect combination of chemicals that will somehow give our taste buds something that they that they like. You know, if they put that much money into, you know, growing things organically or whatever, then we'd have a whole different society, I think.
You know, I don't like to sound like a religious fanatic. But, you know, we do have the tendency when we're excited about our food to really want other people to share the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I really believe that the food that I eat is the most delicious. And when I'm trying to convince people, or at least open their eyes to healthier eating, one of the comments is, but I like my food. I like the way it tastes. I like eating it, and I know.
But they like the way it makes you feel.
You know, if they just connected the dots and made the shift, I know they would be happier.
But you know what is really was really eye-opening for me is that when my kids started in public school, I was really nervous, you know,
mm-hmm.
are they going to be teased because of, you know, these Whole Foods lunches and I'm packing them, or are they going to want what everyone else had? And it was actually one thing is my kids really do like the food. They're not going around saying, oh, I wish I could eat at McDonald's, and I wish I could have this, I wish I had that. They really like it. I mean, they're good, enthusiastic eaters. And when they went to school, and I used to come in to visit, you know, to help in the class or whatever, and the kids were like, can you make a lunch for me?
Oh.
And they were, and it was, you know, when we have kids over, they're not, they eat the food, they like it. And so I think, I hate so much that in books, you know, anytime a kid has the children's books, anytime a kid has a mom that cooks healthy, you know, they're all deprived and it tastes awful and they're all.
I
don't think kids really
it's
like
not
that.
True.
You know, I think, you know, my kids, they feel healthy, you know, they enjoy their foods and they're not.
Well, the thing is, it starts at home and it starts when we're babies, just when life begins. And you wrote another book, Simple Natural Baby Food.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that really blows my mind. And I was raised on food in a jar.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking about it, you know, what were people thinking? They couldn't make food for their babies?
Right. And we wonder why we're a society that likes processed foods, because that's the first things pretty much we eat.
Yeah.
You know, it's food from boxes and jars. So, yeah, and that's why, I know when I had a baby, I'm like, I don't eat food from jars and boxes. Am I going to feed my baby that? You know, I was just like, no way.
Seems so normal. Now, this was a long time ago. It was the 60s and 70s. This is what I grew up with, and I remember feeding my younger brother right out of the jar, these little spoons, you know, the mashed carrots and all these different very simple foods. And I never took it. Never thought about it, and somehow marketing really transformed
mm-hmm.
America over a very short amount of time.
Yeah.
And, okay, so now we're getting back to preparing food for babies. I don't have my finger on the pulse as to how many women and men today feed their babies baby food from a jar, but I imagine it's still kind of popular.
I think it's still a very big market, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's still plenty of baby food.
Yeah, so it's just so simple. You can boil up a vegetable, put it in a blender, and make a puree and let it cool, and you're done.
Yeah, yeah. I know, if you think about it, you know, I mean, baby food, like you said, hasn't been around as long as people do before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just, you know, and you know, when nature designed something that had to have a special, you know, store-bought food, yeah. And it's just so easy. I mean, it's you know, the extra step of just pureeing, you know, you're cooking carrots or vegetables for your family, just, you know, cook some, take some aside and puree it.
Yeah, it just really blows my mind. And I really believe that the child will develop a well-formed palate of flavors and, like your girls, not really be tempted to have the junk that's offered to them or that they're surrounded with.
Right. And, you know, I mean, I try not to be too rigid. And, you know, if we're at a party or somewhere, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, go ahead, taste it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But most oftentimes, you know, they'll get a, you know, piece of birthday cake, you know, that's, and they'll like it for first few bites, and then after that it's like, okay, that's enough, because you know they're it's so sweet or so processed, so you know they taste it, but they prefer, you know, the real foods.
Okay, so we have a few minutes left. Tomorrow's the big day, Thanksgiving. Are
mm-hmm.
you making dinner?
I am, yeah. It's pretty much just us here. My family's all on the East Coast, and now I'm in California, so
mm-hmm.
it's going to be the four of us, and yeah, we do a dinner, but we don't go all that crazy. So just going to make the bean and nut loaf that's in the Vegetarian Mother's Cookbook, and roasted root vegetables, and apple crisp, and you know, some green vegetables, and yeah, just a nice simple time, and we just enjoy the day together, and I think we'll go out for a hike, and I don't know how it is where you are, but here it's a beautiful, sunny, I don't know, 65 degrees.
Oh, that's
so
nice. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, so we'll just go out for a nice hike, and yeah, just enjoy being home together.
Right. Actually, the weather's pretty good here, and I think it's supposed to be good tomorrow, so the Macy's Day Parade should be pretty good. It's certainly cool in autumn here. I don't know what the temperature is, but I actually did yoga on my terrace this afternoon. I just felt like being outside, and it was cool, but it was pleasant. I was dressed warm, and it was really fun. So roasted root vegetables. I love that.
Oh, my gosh, that's one of my favorite recipes. Actually, I roast almost all my vegetables now. It's just something about the roasting. It brings out the sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, so what I'll, you know, I'll mix some potatoes and sweet potatoes and parsnips and carrots and beets and just toss them in olive oil, a little bit of salt and pepper, and then I like a splash of balsamic vinegar, just add a little something,
mm-hmm.
and then roast it at about 400 in the oven for about 45 minutes. And they're crispy on the outside and, like, melt in your mouth, tender on the inside. And you know, what's nice about the roasted root vegetables is you can eat them hot right from the oven, but they're also really great to bring for a potluck because they're great at room temperature, too, and even the leftovers cold from the refrigerator. So it's one of my favorite, yeah, bring along, you know, when I'm going somewhere meals.
Yeah, I like it, too. It's relatively simple.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a bunch of cutting, but it doesn't have to be really sophisticated cutting.
Right.
And the colors.
Oh, yeah.
It's just so pretty because you have, well, it depends on what you're putting in it, but you have the oranges and the yellows and the whites, and you use beets, so a little red, and it's really a lovely autumn dish.
Yeah, actually, I just picked up some, we had these beet combinations at our farmer's market. It was the orange ones, the yellow ones, and the red ones.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's going to be really pretty. Well, and then, actually, I like to also add some toasted pine nuts on the top and give a little bit of protein and nuttiness, and that's good.
Yeah, well, nuts are really important, and can't encourage them enough, especially when you buy them raw and you can toast them yourself,
mm-hmm.
Because they offer a lot of nutrition, a lot of minerals, and good oils, and they're the good fats, and they're very satisfying. A little goes a long way, and pine nuts, now, that's your... what's the word I'm looking for? They've been a little pricey lately. I don't know about out in California, but pine nuts have been more.
Yeah, they're always a little bit more pricey. But what the thing that's good about nuts is that a little goes a long
mm-hmm.
way. They're so concentrated and rich that, yeah, you don't need so many. So it's worth it.
Absolutely worth it. And then it's a nut. Bean casserole?
Bean and nut loaf.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of like a, you know, similar to a meatloaf, but made with beans and nuts, and it's a good protein and just sort of that good kind of comfort food that you want on these holidays.
Right. Sounds really, really lovely. Well, Okay, so I just want to...
Oh, and I should mention, with our apple crisp, we're going to have some cinnamon ice cream.
Oh, is that in your book? And, you know, cinnamon...
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, ice cream is good for this time of the year, too. I even have a pumpkin, if you wanted to make a pumpkin ice cream pod, as a pumpkin ice cream recipe and a ginger snap crust. And there you go. It's a good holiday dessert.
Perfect. But I just want to say cinnamon. Cinnamon is one of those great spices that has a lot of great health-promoting properties.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
A lot of the spices do. And so, just get all of these great, natural, wholesome foods together. They taste great, and they're going to make you feel really great, too.
Right, exactly.
Well, Kathy, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a fun hour for me.
Yeah,
I've enjoyed talking with you, and I can't wait to dip into this book, Lick It. I'm going to be making those... drumstick cones. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Have a great Thanksgiving.
You too.
And you've been listening to me. I'm Karen Hartglass. This is It's All About Food. Have a very happy Thanksgiving.